We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WIXR.org.
We're coming to you tonight from the Graduate Hotel, just off the square in Oxford, Mississippi.
When you're feeling way down low, got no place to go, can't find a lover, can't find no friend, call your soul and soul, put your hand on the radio, can you feel it, down on your toes?
Thank you. Welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. As I mentioned, we're in the lobby of this beautiful Graduate Hotel right here in downtown Oxford, Mississippi. Great show for y'all today. Thank you so much for being here. We've got these gospel rockers from just up the road. The Wilkins sisters are here to rock this place out, man. I hope the roof is on tied on real tightly. We've got from Nashville, Tennessee, a fine acoustic duo, Anana Kay and Arakli Gabriel. Fine songwriters, fine players, great voices. And our author today is a graduate of the University of Mississippi Fine Arts Program in Creative Writing. And he is a creative writer, ladies and gentlemen. His novel is called Bomb Island, and it's fun to read. It's going to be fun to talk about. Stephen Hundley is here, y'all. Stephen Hundley. But we've got our own fun cast of characters here. They're pretty nutso, if I may say so. You love them, we love them. Bring them to the stage, y'all. It is the Yellow Bushwhacker Big Band.
Singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to singing in the dead of night, take these sunken eyes and learn to see dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. To arise.
Yelling Bushwhackers, y'all, let them hear you. How about that? Yalla Bushwhacker Big Band doing a Beyonce song, right? No. Blackbird, very famous song by Mr. Sir Paul McCartney. Very nice cover, as Beyonce's is too. I heard hers very nice. All righty, y'all, let's get our first guest up here, Anana Kay and Irakli Gabriel from Nashville, Tennessee, by way of the Republic of Georgia, Russia. I'm told that in the Republic of Georgia, that's where wine was invented 8,000 years ago.
So they
claim. Wow. So we have y'all to blame for that. And living in Nashville these last couple of years, y'all collaborated with one of our favorite guests who unfortunately passed away a couple of years back, David Olney. Great songwriter, David Olney. And their new album is called Whispers and Sighs, and David is on it and helped collaborate and wrote some of the songs on it. So what a wonderful tribute. So glad y'all are here. What a great guy, and y'all are a great duo. So happy to have you. Y'all please welcome Anana Kay and Irakli Gabriel.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much. If you don't know where Georgia is from, we're stuck in between East and West, and that reflects in our songs. This song is from the Whispers and Sighs record, which we wrote and recorded with David Olney, and it's one of our favorite songs to play. Thank you.
truth is you need me and I need you. Love never needs an explanation and it doesn't like to hide. Baby, baby, why can't we get this right?
Thank you so, so very much. The next song we usually play at the end of our set when we're really warmed up, but we're going to try it now.
This next song is called Ain't It Yet, and it's about certain political powers clinging to the past. Right as we speak, our country, Georgia, is fighting for its democracy and independence from Russia, so it feels timely to play this song.
The moon in the sky and the stars on high, they shine for you. The naked winter trees shiver in the breeze, they sigh for you. Oh, the midnight river flashes gold, flashes silver, and dances for you. The sorceress cowl hoots for you. The king is sick in bed, his crown is falling from his head, but he ain't dead yet. The princess in a tower plucks petals from a flower and thinks of you. And all the maidens writing letters, fighting about who loved you better, they stink for you. And the dead man on the rope should have checked his horoscope, he swings for you. Oh, the widow dressed in lace needs to rearrange her face, almost stinks for you. The king is sick in bed, his crown is falling from his head, but he ain't dead yet. The king is sick in bed, his crown is falling from his head, but he ain't dead yet, he ain't dead yet. Thank you.
pray to your sweet daughter. Fall down when soldiers slaughter more men for you. They have agents at your table. They're effortlessly able to keep eyes on you. Your high priest is crazed, just a smattering of days before he dies on you. The cathedral on the golden pulpit eagle disturbed anew. The king is sick in bed, his crown is falling from his head, but he ain't dead yet. The king is sick in bed, his crown is falling from his head, but he ain't dead yet. He ain't dead yet. Thank you so very much. This is a song called My Last Dream of You. It's also on the Whispers and Sighs record. We finished our album when David was performing in Florida, when he passed away during his performance. And this album that we worked so hard on became his posthumous record, and it was very hard to put this out without him, and every time we sing this song, swear, we think he's right here with us. So this is called My Last Dream of You.
It's an easy kind of evening. The stars are out, the moon is too. Thought I'd come by to see what you're doing. Maybe go for a ride with you. We'd go down by the river and watch the water drift slowly by. And we dream that it's forever before we had to say goodbye. Over there she's still waiting, and I know she's true. Over here it's the yearning, it's the wonder that I miss most of all, and the sound of your laughter, the way your tears would fall. How do you know if you're dreaming when everything seems so real? I can hear you, but I can see you. I can feel you next to me. Over there she's still waiting, and I know she's true. Over here the light is fading. You. It's an easy kind of healing.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you, Thacker Mountain Show. Thank you.
Thank you so much. God bless you all. Thank you. Thank you.
Anana Kay and Irakli Gabriel, y'all. Let them hear you. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Wonderful sound. Thank y'all so much. Their CD is called Whispers and Sighs. Previous releases include Sentient and Detour. And great stuff with David Olney. Unfortunately, we lost David in 2020 at the age of 71. Some of you may recall David died on stage during a gig right after he finished a song. He said, "I'm sorry," and put his head down and passed away there at the 30A Songwriters Festival. So we still think of David. I remember when he was on the show, he really delivered a punch and just a great guy. So they're carrying on the tradition very well. One more time for him. That was really beautiful. Thank y'all. Nana K. Irakli Gabriel, Whispers and Sighs. We'd like to remind you that you're listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. You're hearing us on WUMS, the University of Mississippi, WYXR, Community Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, the stations of Mississippi, Public Broadcasting, the stations of Alabama, Public Radio, WUTC, Community Radio in Chattanooga, Tennessee, WUOT, Community Radio in Knoxville, Tennessee, and KNCE, True Taos Radio in Taos, New Mexico. Keon Love, y'all. Thank you, Keon. Our next guest is author Stephen Hundley. Stephen obviously paid some people to be here today, and that's fine. His novel, I might add, debut novel, is called Bomb Island. He previously published a story collection called The Aliens Will Come to Georgia First. So Stephen obviously has some problems, y'all, but we love him. I love this book. So much fun. It is called Bomb Island from Hub City Press. Stephen Hundley, y'all.
Thank you, Jim.
Ooh-wee, what a ride this book is. Let's tell the folks about Bomb Island. I mentioned some of it. Give us the setting and how it is kind of, there is a real place that suggested this novel. When you went fishing where you were a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, Bomb Island is sort of a composite of Cumberland Island, which is Georgia's largest national barrier island, and also Ossabaw, St. Catharines, all those barrier islands kind of smooshed into one. There is a real bomb off Tybee, so I moved that about 60 miles south and put a tiger on the island and brought some people out to live in the trees and just started pushing the tension until something popped, and that's what the novel is. So it's a ride.
These folks, these great characters in here, and we love them all, Whistle, yeah, is the mother sage, and it was her great idea. Hey, y'all, let's go get a tiger, and let's bring this tiger on the island with us. And that's, yeah, what she does. What could go wrong, right?
Yeah.
What about fish? Tell us about fish. You can't help but love fish.
Our boy protagonist, Fish, he's about 15 and has grown up on the island, kind of in isolation with all these rebellious types raising him, you know, in relative isolation on Bomb Island near the mainland, and I think for Fish, this is just a normal day. Things like tigers, and his day job is running a glass-bottom boat tour of an atomic bomb, so as Fish's normal is different than most people's normal.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned the barrier islands. There are several out there on the coast of Georgia, and one of them really did have tree houses, right?
Where, that's right. Yeah.
I guess in the 60s, a bunch of freaks went out there and tried to squat.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. On
and
the
mosquitoes swooped down, and that was the end of that, right?
It's a tale as old as time. You go out to the islands, and the mosquitoes carry you away. But
Yeah,
the backside of Osaba Island, there's a place called Hippie Village in Fanny Slough, if you guys are familiar.
Fanny Slough.
That's right, yeah.
That sounds like a Mississippi place.
That'll be the name of my next book, probably.
Oh, you got to go with Bomb Island, Fanny Slough. Yeah. So, obviously, the tiger is your invention, as are these great characters. But this setting, because it's very important, the setting is, and Fish and Whistle and Nutso and all these wonderful characters. Derbeer is sort of our villain. Tell us about Derbeer.
Derbeer is a charter fisherman and a father. And, you know, all kinds of folks are fathers. And in this case, it's our antagonist. And he's bringing his own tensions into the story and his own view of what's, you know, how you can do right. So I think he's a very human antagonist. That's my favorite thing about him. You feel for him as much as you hate him.
Oh, man, he's easy to hate. He's a mean guy. Yes. He's mean to his daughter, and we just don't stand for that around here.
That's right.
So what's interesting to me is, you know, you're reading along, and you've got these great characters with these really kind of funny names, and you're thinking, oh, this is a Tom Robbins book or Harry Cruise book where it goes way over the top. But you, and you're a young man, what are you, 60? I think everybody's 60. You have this narrative control where you keep it, keep the plot and the story where it's believable, if we can believe that. Did you do that? Were you conscious of that? I don't want to go over the top with this thing.
I wanted the characters to feel human, even though there are a lot of speculative elements in the book, you know, like a tiger and an atomic bomb. I wanted something to make you feel like it was still a real place where this could really happen. One of the ways we do that is the way the South commodifies its oddities. So, okay, there's an atomic bomb on the island. So, of course, when you're driving into the town, you're seeing billboards inviting you to come snorkel and scuba dive and, you know, touch God and brush eternity and all this sensational things.
Which they kind of had some of that stuff. Did they have that originally? Like, they had tourists that were coming out to look at this thing in the 50s, right? When it first, there was an accident, right? Two jets collided.
That's the bomb
went down.
Yeah.
And people, didn't they flock to this site to see this bomb originally?
Let me think back to the 50s.
I thought you were 60, man. What's the deal? All right. You got your Master's of Fine Arts here at the University of Mississippi at our incredible creative writing program. Do you have any memories of Oxford? Where did you live while you were here, if you could tell us?
I had the most fantastic little hole of an apartment on Price Street. And I remember in that winter it snowed. That was one of the genesis of the book. I was locked in watching all those people slide down that Price Street hill, which was pretty intense. But the book was drafted, you know, 500 yards from where we're standing now, so it is a really wonderful, emotional, kind of full circle moment to be here and bring it to you now.
You mean you didn't grab a garbage top and slide down Price Street while you were here?
You know I did.
You did, didn't you? Yeah. And then gets up and writes Bomb Island. Who were some of your instructors while you were in that program? I bet you had some really wonderful teachers.
I really did. I had Tom Franklin, who's here, his wife. Beth Ann Finley, of course.
Oh, man.
Chris Offutt, who blurbed the book kindly.
Great guy.
Poet Melissa Ginsberg, also a fantastic poet.
Yes. We love them all. Yeah. Well, and you were telling me you already started on the next one. Is it a novel as well?
It is a novel. It's a novel. It's a kind of spanning romance. Right now the working title is The Lay of Linda, and I think it's got some real teeth on it. I'm very excited about it.
The Lay of Linda?
The Lay of Linda.
Okay, Stephen. That sounds great. Well, man, if it's anything like this one, I did want to mention, we're going to have you read it just a little bit from it, but there's sort of this new idea going around. Charles Frazier, who wrote Cold Mountain, and then we had Ron Rash was on, and he wrote a novel. It was in the 200-page zone, and their thing is the novel should feel sweeping and like a saga and like an epic And it's 200 pages.
Yeah.
And this book clocks in about 200. So are you aware of that kind of thing, of really trying to pack and compress? So it just packs more of a punch that way.
I haven't talked to Ron about the movement of the 200-page novel, but I do believe in the 200-page novel. And I think starting as a short story writer and really taking a lot of joy and pride in the short story as an art form, to take that into a novel and make something that feels taut, is a big priority of mine creatively.
Yes, well, you do it perfectly in this book. So, I mean, I don't mind a big, long, sloppy novel.
Yeah.
But when you get one like this, it's just every page and, you know, very economical. And you care about these characters, and that's key.
Thank you.
Do you mind reading a little bit from Bomb Island?
I would love to
read. Would y'all like to hear a little bit from Bomb? Stephen Hundley, y'all.
Thank you. I'm going to bring us in right at the beginning with our protagonist, Fish, the boy. And he's watching Sugar the tiger stalk a foal on the beach. In the years since Sugar began hunting, Fish had seen him, the half-wild ponies of Bomb Island, kick and arc their backs when the tiger broke from cover to wrestle them by their necks and crush them to the sand, or else ram them so they rolled with their hooves scrambling in the air. Next to Sugar, most of the thin island horses looked like dogs. 20 yards from Fish's tree, the foal dipped its head to pluck at the grass, and Sugar crept forward. This was as close as Fish had ever been. Even though they had raised Sugar from a cub, he always hunted alone. But the tiger was nearly within range of the foal, and it had given Fish no sign that he knew he was in the tree. Fish's hands began to sweat, and he wished the horse would run. Sugar might have been a concrete gargoyle the way he lay over the sand, but the foal was saved. It was joined by a group of four healthy adults, and the horses climbed the dunes, walking in a mob. Fish edged farther along the oak limb to watch Sugar slink backwards and melt away as the horses stomped into the grass. The tiger moved through the bramble at the forest edge in silence, pouring his large body under limbs and into cover. When he passed beneath the branch where Fish lay, the boy saw the white-black pattern of his fur flash beneath the green saw palms. The purple needle points on the plant's leaf tips barely rustled. They only swiveled around in small circles. Soon Sugar had crossed back into the dunes, but now he was upwind of the horses and at their flank. Fish could see the tiger's face, eyes wide and body still. He was sorry for taking the binoculars from the side of his brother's bed, but he was glad he had them now. Having lived first in a dank garage and then on the island, Sugar was a self-taught killer. The tiger must have thought he invented hunting when he approached again, creeping beneath the tide line and peeking at the horses over the lip of sand. Then he spooked a bird that, launching from the sticks it had been hunkered in, brought all the horses wheeling round. Sugar was caught with the sea at his back. The tiger rushed the horses, snarling, but a dishwater stallion kicked him to the ground. He rolled once over the sand, then leapt back into the low surf. The water reached his chin. Small waves slapped at his body and drenched his fur so that he looked small, just a knot of muscle. The dishwater stallion stood with three brown mares between Sugar and dry land. They pushed the tiger deeper into the water and tried to flatten his head beneath their hooves. Fish dropped from his tree and sprinted over the dunes. He shouted at the horses, "Hey, yah, get away!" But they didn't turn. He snapped branches from a dead white tree that was half buried in the sand and hurled them at the horses, then chunks of bark, then broken pieces of she shells, getting closer to the standoff until, in desperation, he tore the steel binoculars off his neck and slung them into the ribs of a brown mare. The horse turned to snap at Fish's arm, and Sugar slashed it across the neck, then escaped to the shore. Fish ran into the dunes while behind him the mare cried and fled, and the rest of the horses broke and ran down the beach without her. Sugar's hips came to points with his wet fur pressed to his body. There was blood on the tiger's face. It welled out of a cut over his brow. "Hey, Sugar," Fish said. He kept his face to the tiger. He backed away slowly, shuffling towards the trees. Sugar watched the horses run. He huffed and gagged salt water. "Hey, Sugar, easy." This was the closest Fish had ever seen the tiger come to death, the first time he had seen it in real danger. When he charged the horses, Fish felt kindred to Sugar. Now, with the tiger shaking the water from its shoulders and leering at the distant horses, twitching his tail in frustration, Fish felt alone. He felt he should not be here. "Easy, Sugar." The tiger walked to the boy. Fish reached his hand, and Sugar slid beneath it. White hair clung to his fingers. "Easy." Sugar pressed his head against Fish, and the boy stumbled. He bumped him again and swatted his legs. Even play swats with the tiger's claws tucked into its paws would leave bruises. Sugar moved Fish like a toy. He wrapped his paws around the boy's leg and pulled him down. "Sugar, stop!" Fish punched the tiger beneath his ear as hard as he could, but it didn't budge. He pulled at his leg, but Sugar had hold of him. He was alone on the beach. His family was a mile away at camp. Fear got into Fish. He jerked his knee and screamed at the tiger. Sugar dragged him across the sand. When he felt the tiger's claws tear across his calf, Fish cried out and dug his fingers into the Sugar's face. He felt the large eyeball squish beneath his thumb, and the cat recoiled. As quick as he had come at Fish, the tiger drew away. The boy watched stunned as Sugar turned, shook his head, then sprinted down the beach on the last narrow strip of firm, wet sand not washed over by the tide. The celebrating horses had stopped to play and were high-stepping in and out of the surf. They didn't see the tiger racing towards them on the wind. Sugar leapt from the sand and savaged the tall dishwater stallion. He bit at its neck while his claws dug and kicked at its belly until the horse rolled to its side in the water and lost its throat. The other horses scattered and raced in twisting paths over the dunes and into the trees where they crashed like giant, graceless deer. Thank you. We lost Jim.
Good job, man. Thank you. Stephen Hunley, y'all. Bomb Island from Hub City Press. Stephen will join us at the Square Books table after the show, and I hope sells every one of those copies because I hope you all get one. It is a fun read. Perfect. Perfect warm weather stuff. All righty. Speaking of warm, it's about to get pretty hot up in here, ladies and gentlemen, with the Wilkins sisters. Y'all know them as the beloved daughters of our beloved, the late Reverend John Wilkins. They toured and recorded with Reverend John for years. We lost Reverend John when we lost him in 2020 at the age of 76. He put out a couple of albums that the young ladies are featured on, You Can't Hurry God, and the last one, Trouble, which was produced by our good buddy who's right here playing bass, Amos Harvey. And yeah, Reverend John kind of left instructions. I'd like for you to please, you know, feature the daughters more. They're beautiful harmonies and voices on the record, and Amos did just that. If you don't have Trouble, highly recommended. We look forward to more releases from the Wilkins sisters. In the meantime, y'all are in for a treat. Please welcome the Wilkins sisters.
Yeah. the Down Home Church. Y'all like that? All right, how about You Can't Hurry God? This is my daddy's favorite song. Come on. Thank you so much. Thank you for having us. We're going to do one more song, and it's called Wade in the Water. I hope y'all know that. Well, y'all can help us sing, all right? All right. Come on, clap your hands like this. Come on. I can't hear y'all clapping those hands. Let me hear you. Come on.
Wilkins sisters, y'all, one more time for them, please. We're going to lock these doors and fire off some cocktails and let the Wilkins do another hour. What do y'all say? That's good thing I'm not in charge of things, because that's exactly what we would do. I mean, if you had to leave, you could leave, but the doors would be locked, ladies and gentlemen. All righty, that was, man, that was so beautiful. The Wilkins sisters. We will have them back. Wilkins, yes, ma'am, the Wilkins sisters. One more time for all our guests, if you don't mind. Anana Kay and Arakli Gabriel. How about them? Whispers and Sighs. They brought some CDs with them. Stephen Hundley, Bomb Island. The Gonzo Beach Read for Our Times, ladies and gentlemen. We have copies. We'll visit with Stephen afterwards. We want to thank everybody for helping us have another great spring season. Thank you, this audience, for following us around town. You'll never know where we're going to show up next. Also, our sponsors, really quickly, guys, Carol Etheridge Family Foundation, Dr. Stephen and Gay Case, Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation, the Mississippi Arts Commission, R&B Fader Foundation, Southside Gallery, the good folks at Square Books. What would we do without them? Yeah, man. Taproot Audio Design, the Lyric Oxford, the University of Mississippi, Visit Oxford, Yaknabatawpha Arts Council, Ben Banahan and Susan Curlin, Don and Marianne Frugé, Douglas Vance, Dr. John and Tammy Cook, Dr. Lisa Chandler, Entergy, Farish Percy and Grant Adams, The Ink Spot, Jackie Bailey, Leslie Westbrook, the Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks. Party waiting to happen. Pearly Peacock Design, Snooki and Mary Lou Williams Foundation of Water Valley, Mississippi. There are wildlife, fisheries, and parks down there, too. Probably all at your house there, Mary Lou. Also, Tom and Carol Sharp, Wayne and Weed at Drinkwater, Gondi and Creasy. We also want to thank our interns, the young folks that make this show happen. We couldn't do it without them. We love them. Brittany Cable, Brady Reese, Phoebe Goodwin, Autumn Payne, Samuel Brooks, Riley Escobar. Yeah, yeah. We love them. Hope they all come back next fall. Also, we've had food backstage. That's why everybody's so perky up here. We'd like to thank the Blind Pig, Moe's Barbecue, My Michelle's, Proud Larry's, the Graduate Hotel, and the aforementioned Amos Harvey and Red Panther Brewing Company, the official brewery of Thacker Mountain Radio Hour, and their Clarksdale Ale. So good. Who am I leaving out? Well, this Yellow Bushwhacker band's been great every week. Square Books has been great. They book our authors, and man, have I been a lucky dude to have these world-class booksellers decide what I get to read every week, and it's been a great book every week. Great music every week, thanks to Tim Lee, our production director. The Thacker Board of Directors, we couldn't do it without them. And you, our audience, thank y'all so much. In person and online and on the radio, we love you. Tune in wherever you listen to us. We'll be on the radio or your device of choice all summer long with some great shows, some ones you remember. We'll crank her back up in September 6th, I believe, 2024 for our fall season. We love y'all, but you know we got to hear one more from this big old band. We'll see you on the radio. Thacker Mountain Radio Hour's executive director is Amanda Weimer. Our production director is Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front of house engineer is Blake Gardner.
Support for WYXR comes from Feast & Graze, offering luxury grazy boxes, cheese and charcuterie platters, and tables for any occasion. Free delivery available within Shelby County. A new storefront with high PR wellness at Poplar Plaza Shopping Center. More information at feastandgraze.com.
Church Health's Memphis Plan continues its decades-long commitment serving local musicians with comprehensive health care and also tailors its focus to small business owners and the self-employed. Health care through the Memphis Plan provides care in Memphis for Memphians. Related services include preventative health, optometry, dental care, and more. More information regarding availability at memphisplan.org or at 901-272-PLAN.
In Memphis, when vulnerable seniors are in need and families are in crisis, they turn to MIFA. Meals on Wheels helps seniors stay healthy and independent. Family programs provide emergency assistance for utilities, rent, and mortgage. And the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program advocates for seniors in care facilities. Information and volunteer opportunities available at MIFA.org/WYXR.